D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Parker Kelly here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Chad Withrow. Hello, Chad. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Hope you're doing well.
We are. First of all, congratulations on your new venture with your friend and our friend, Jonathan Hutton, at Sport and State. We had Hutton on the show the other day. I know the two of you are excited, so congratulations. I just want to say that to start.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot of work in the process to get this thing ready, and it was fun launching it this week, and it's been a great reception so far. So appreciate you guys and hopping on your show every week, and appreciate everybody who tuned in these past 3 days.
Also, I watched some of the Baylor-Brentwood Academy game last night on ESPN, and remember during Titans games when the broadcast would show footage of Derrick Henry playing high school football, and it was literally man versus boys out there? That's how I felt watching David Gabriel Georges last night. That was my first viewing of him. I can understand why Vols fans are excited.
Well, and keep this in mind, too. Like, you're spot on right, Adam, with what you're saying. Now, well, who Derrick Henry was playing were little boys in North Florida.
True.
In the smallest classification, right? This dude is doing this against all future SEC players on that Brentwood Academy defense. He's got two Tennessee teammates that played for Brentwood Academy on that defense. Kenneth Simon, son of great Tennessee linebacker Kevin Simon, being one of them. 250-plus all-purpose yards. They lined him up in the slot. They lined him up out wide. He had a big screen pass for a touchdown. I mean, dude is a freak, and I mean that in the kindest way. I am very excited. I keep thinking, you know, what if DGG played at Even Beach the way Jalen Hurd did? And Jalen Hurd was phenomenal in high school. And I know we remember watching him and covering him. But how many records would this guy break if he were playing in any other classification other than Division II, 3A with far and away the best athletes in the state in that classification? That's what's so remarkable is this is one of the best single classifications in the nation. And he is putting up video game numbers against those dudes. He would rush for 15,000 yards against Derrick Henry's schedule from back in high school. Like, I have never been higher on a high school football recruit than I am DGG. Mark it down, fellas, and we can play this at some point. Tennessee will win the SEC in one of his 3 years. I don't know which one. They're going to win a conference title, and it's going to be because of that dude.
Chad, I said this dude was everything that you advertised him to be and more. Men amongst boys with him running the football. So UT has them a good one when you're talking about running backs.
And he's also like the Ivan Drago of high school football. And, you know, he's a machine. Like, he doesn't eat sugar. He does nothing but works out.
They made that a big deal. They were like, how is it that a 18-year-old kid doesn't eat sugar?
I mean, D-Mace, it's perfect. Like, English is his second language. You know,
yeah, he's from Canada. Is he from Canada?
He's from Canada, but he speaks French. Mm-hmm. He's French-Canadian from Quebec. He's Haitian-Canadian, his family. His family all speaks French. French is his first language. He speaks English well enough, but it's his second language. He's not spent a lot of time macking on girls on campus. This dude is eating protein all day, no sugar. He's working out, you know, probably 12 hours out of the day. And he's banging hats on the football field. That's what he does. It's all he does. That's why he's going to win a championship for the Vols. I'm completely convinced after watching one week one high school football game last night in its entirety.
Speaking of Tennessee, Chad, I saw you post this about an hour ago. Tennessee should play Arian Carter and dare the NCAA to do something about it. The guy received $400 for a flight and paid it back. Meanwhile, guys are recording sacks in NFL preseason games and are eligible immediately. Two questions. One, help us make sense of whatever the hell is going on in the NCAA right now. And two, if Tennessee were to take you up on that proclamation and play Arian Carter, what do you think the NCAA would actually do?
I think they'd try to say Tennessee was ineligible and lost those two games is what they would attempt to do. I don't know how they could with a straight face. And I guarantee you Tennessee could fight it in court and show that he was, in fact, eligible, and it was fine, and they're not going to make them ineligible for that game. I think it's on Tennessee now with everything going on. I really do. If they sit him, it's a Tennessee decision. They're playing by the rules way too much in a sport that has no rules. So that, to me, it's on Tennessee if they decide not to play the guy, not the NCAA anymore, because I think it'd be foolish not to play him, because just like I wrote, you got guys who are in the NFL who are actively trying to get cut from their rosters right now so they can join a camp for college football, because they know they're going to get paid more money to go back and play in college. And guys, you got college coaches all over the place, and I've talked to some people about this. They are going to be actively scouting. There's going to be scouts in the department of every SEC team watching preseason games this weekend to see who's going to drop from teams that they can take that have a fifth year of eligibility. Mark my word, this is happening all over the place.
So, Chad, this weekend, as much as we know this is wrong in a sense, and when you're talking sports, like, it's, that's just wrong, like going to get a guy that has already spent time with the NFL team in any capacity, and I'm not even talking making a roster, but they played in preseason games. You know it's wrong. Are they just going to continue to do this until somebody tells them they can't anymore? Because none of them really likes this.
No, they're going to keep doing it. Hey, look, everybody, it's all self-serving. Right now, the players are doing it, and I understand why. They don't have a future in the NFL, the guys we're talking about, most of them. They know they got a cup of coffee at best. So
I'm specifically talking about the coaches, really, because the players, they're going to do what they're going to do. It's the coaches that, because there always has to be a coach or a program that allows these guys to come back.
They have to say, we're going to take it, even if it means we got to take one kid somewhere along the line and ask him to leave.
Yeah, look, Tom Izzo can stand.
Hey, stay off my boy Izzo, man.
I'm paying him a compliment. Okay. Tom Izzo has the clout to stand up and say, I'm not going to do it. This is ridiculous. I'll call out coaches that go and get dudes who played in Europe or played in the G League and all this, or that. I'm not going to do it. You know, we can't do it as a sport. Dan Hurley, I think, can say that too, having won, you know, national titles. If you are a coach, though, in the SEC, let me pose the question to you guys. If you're a coach in the SEC, and this is now allowed because of a court ruling, and there are going to be other SEC rivals that go and get – we know that LSU is going to go get guys. We know that other programs are going to go get guys. Let's say someone goes out and they add three difference makers that were in an NFL camp that have another year of eligibility. Let's say that team is Arkansas, okay? Let's say Tennessee goes on the road to Arkansas and they lose by a field goal in large part because some receiver dropped down from the NFL to Arkansas and had 140 yards receiving. And then a defensive back had a pick six. And those are the two difference makers. Do you think Tennessee will cut Josh Heupel slack if he didn't add one of those pro players, if he had a chance to? Do you think that they're going to stand up and say, boy, at least our coach stands for something and didn't go out and did it?
That's the problem.
No, they're going to be like, why didn't you go out and get him?
I'm going to sit there and say, we're not doing what it takes to win. I've seen it, guys, on social media already today. If Tennessee doesn't go out and add four or five of these guys, we don't care about winning the way other programs do.
Just me.
That is going to be the reaction to it.
But I thought it just meant more with all SEC teams, regardless of who it was.
And that's what it's got to be. That's my point. Like, if one SEC team is going to do it, D-Mace, then everybody's going to try to do it. I really believe that. I think they're all going to take anybody they can if they feel like that player is a plug-and-play guy who can come right in and help their team win SEC football games or Big Ten football games or whatever the case may be. If you were a top-level program, they're going to do it because they know – come November, if they lose a game they were supposed to win, and that team has three of these guys on it, and you have none, and it's a close game, and your fan base sees it as you didn't do what was necessary, they're not going to cut you any slack.
So with that being said, Chad, you know, you're talking about guys potentially coming out of basically the NFL to play in college, and say if a UT doesn't, you know, reach and try to get one of these guys, and they're ultimately – a reason why they may lose to a team because they may have gotten a guy they had a chance to get. And with the depth, as we always say, the depth of the SEC, is 8-5 enough for hype on this program?
I mean, I would have to see what the eight were. Mm-hmm. You know, like I always say, Hutton always says it too, and I love it. You know, it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. Mm-hmm. And I think in the SEC or in college football, it's also who you lost to. You know, like if you upset someone and maybe you lost some of the toss-up games, but you have that big signature win, maybe you feel better about an 8-4 or 8-5 at the end of the year after a bowl game. If you lose to Vandy for a second straight year and you drop another couple games you thought going into the season you were going to win and you don't get it and you're, you know, get 7 or 8 wins, every end-of-the-year record, I think, D-Mace, feels a little bit different based on all that. I'll just say, first off, I don't like any of this. Like, I'm like 95% of sports fans. I think it's ridiculous that guys are leaving the NFL to go back to college with all these court rulings. I think it's absurd, and it shines a spotlight on the absurdity of college football and college sports right now. All I'm saying is I also understand from the coaches and player perspective that your job is to do whatever you can to win games. And if someone is getting an upper hand on you by doing this, coaches are going to try to level the field and do it themselves. Tennessee themselves, guys, just this past week, they added a fifth-year guy who got an exemption because of this new rule from Tennessee Tech, who had exhausted his eligibility. They lost two defensive backs, Idris Farouk being one of them for the season. They added a safety from Tennessee Tech, who had already completed his time there, just right down the road in Cookeville. That's college football in 2026. You start losing bodies in camp, you go out and pull someone up from the farm system in the OVC, and boom, they're on your campus and they're ready to roll.
And Chad, I think the term I would use is like self-preservation. Like you mentioned Izzo and certain coaches that can stand on principle, but they have the bubble, right? They have insulation if you've got the pelts on the wall, right? If you won, but most coaches are self-preservation. So their morals might be one thing, their ethics, but I think that instinct of I have to win or else they're going to move on from me, that's what triggers this. And it pulls other coaches into that fray. So it becomes common.
Yeah, and look, I think those guys, if they start to lose, they haven't really lost the big clip. The ones I mentioned, Izzo, Hurley, they've won pretty much every single season. If they start to lose and they don't like the way it's going and they're still around coaching, guess what they're going to do? Probably the stuff they hate doing right now.
Adapt.
They're going to say, well who's, I got to do it.
Baseball, Tim Corbin, he's doing that. I don't think he wanted to have to do it this way. I think he wanted to stay with his formula. He thought that was the best way, and he thought he could maybe win staying with that, but he's had to adjust. I think that's a great example of what we're talking about.
Exactly right. And I think you can stand on principle all you want, but if you are a competitive person and you know that you are judged by winning and losing, you eventually, even you can cry and moan about it all you want, but you are going to do what is necessary to keep up with everyone else. Nick Saban's a great example. Nick Saban was crying about the speed of the game and how it was hurting players and it was unsafe. And what was he doing behind the scenes the whole time? He was developing an offense or hiring someone that could speed it up, because he knew exactly what hurt his great defenses at Alabama, and he started playing the game also. He wasn't going to sit back and say, we're going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust and play slow. No, he was going to do what was working in the sport eventually, even if he didn't like it. But really, he didn't like it because it's the one thing his team couldn't prepare for as well. So he hated it. And then he started talking about injuries and everything else. But the whole time, he was doing the exact same thing that he was complaining about. Why? Because Nick Saban, even after all the winning he had done and the national titles and everything, he wanted to win more national titles. That's how these guys are wired. And you're right, Willie, especially those that have to worry about self-preservation, that know that they could be on the hot seat at any time. They're going to do what's necessary to make sure they're giving themselves a chance to win and win big.
Chad, I read an article, and we're going to talk about it on our show here pretty soon, about the inner workings of the transfer portal and the madness of the quarterback position in a short period of time. And it tracks Bo Pribula, who was at Missouri, for those that maybe don't remember the name, they might have heard the name, but he was Missouri's quarterback. He got hurt at Vanderbilt, and that kind of sunk Missouri's season. Vanderbilt came back, won the game. Missouri wasn't quite the same after that. And then he hit the portal, and he visited, what was it, Adam, 8 schools in 6 days?
8 days on the road,
eight,
6 wow. college visits.
8 days, 6 schools.
More than 6,000 miles traveled across the country and back.
It's complete madness. I think most college fans who are casual probably would never really be concern themselves unless they had a son or a nephew or a relative or a friend that has gone through it. But just to read about the process, and I didn't. So this is what I want to ask you, Chad. Privola was on the Tennessee campus. One of those stops along the ride was to Tennessee. And in the moment in time, Trinidad Chambliss had been ruled ineligible before he got the injunction. So all of these things are moving in real time, and all of these guys have to decide where they're going. And there were cases where Privola and other quarterbacks would get a call from a school, say, come visit. We're interested in you. But they didn't even literally have time to get to the campus before they either had to make the decision or the other team or the school had already signed a different quarterback. It's beyond speed dating, the madness of it.
And, Willie, I'm willing to bet that someone paid more than $400 in flights and travel expenses for Privola to go on all these things that Arion Carter got paid by one agent and then paid him back for one visit to try to go pro. It's crazy. And I remember when Privola was on Tennessee's campus, it was right around the time Tennessee was trying to figure out if Sam Leavitt was going to go to LSU or Tennessee. And so not just the waiting game of guys being eligible, but the musical chairs of, well, we can get this guy to campus. There was a lot of rumors about Brendan Sorsby in Knoxville. His brother, I think, is a high school coach in the Knoxville area, and people were connecting him from Cincinnati to Tennessee. And Tennessee dodged a bullet with that one, where he ends up at Texas Tech, and then everything else broke there. It's crazy to think about trying to get the right guy on campus to commit right away, but if they don't, similar to Tennessee and Sam Leavitt, who chose Lane Kiffin at LSU, then where do you go next, and do you really want that guy? And, oh, this guy also needs to know about this other player over at Duke or whatever the other school is, because that may be the next spot they're visiting. It's both exciting and it's total madness. I mean, the college football transfer portal season now is in many ways kind of like NBA free agency. It can be more exciting than some of the weeks of the season when you get to that end of that season and that mad dash to go add guys, especially quarterbacks.
Let me ask you this. Alabama, I want to get your take on them because that's a big game for Tennessee. And it just came out they're going to each wear the solid color for the first time since what, Adam?
1970.
Yeah. It's always fun to watch those teams play, but that could be a big swing game for Tennessee if they can come up with that win. What's the matchup look like with Alabama in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's a huge one for both. I think Keelon Russell is going to be the starter for Alabama. I know they've named one yet, but I feel like everything I've read is kind of like between him and Austin Mack, it's sort of like George McIntyre, Faison Brandon. Russell's the younger player. He's also the more dynamic player. He's a little bit better of a runner than the veteran guy. When I say veteran, you know, McIntyre's been there one more year than Brandon, but it's similar in that quarterback battle between both. You just know with Tennessee you're going to have a young guy. You at least have the option for a more veteran guy at Alabama. I think it's going to be Russell as the starter. Alabama's very talented. I think that Alabama and Kalen DeBoer are in a similar situation to Josh Heupel in Tennessee, where it's kind of good, not great, from a fan base standpoint of what they see. Can you get those big wins? Josh Heupel's 2-0 against Alabama in Knoxville, which is crazy when you think about all those Tennessee coaches who couldn't beat Nick Saban. And now to see a coach that is undefeated against the rival in Knoxville. They get him in Knoxville again this year. I think it's a huge matchup, big swing game, honestly, Willie, for both those programs. I see both Tennessee and Alabama as possible back-end playoff teams. I think top to bottom from a roster talent standpoint, Tennessee is as good as they've ever been, probably better. There's just a question at quarterback. I saw Heather Dinich going nuts because Tennessee was ranked, and I'm thinking, first off, it's 2 5-star quarterbacks that are battling out for the job. I know they haven't picked one yet, but second, have you seen some of the talent on Tennessee's team? I think this is more future pros than they've ever had under Josh Heupel, and I think that Bama's recruited at a very good level too. So I'm with you, Willie. I think that's a big one for both those teams and a big one for both those coaches to continue to prove they can win monster games.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace. Vin Gidendonic, he joins us every Friday at 4 o'clock. Chad, as always, a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
By the way, the uniforms, the all colors with the orange and crimson, beautiful. When you look at those side by side, I put a list of the other ones I want to see. Duke and North Carolina, dark blue, baby blue would be perfect. And the guys, a sneaky one that jumped out, Miami green versus Florida State burgundy.
Ooh.
On the same field would be a work of art. I'll leave you to ponder with that over the weekend.
Good. Now, you got a problem if you have a black and white TV. It would be tough to tell those apart.
Yeah. If you're colorblind or have issues with that, you're going to have a real problem. Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Problem. Yeah.
Remember the dress? No one could tell what color it was. Everybody had a different opinion on it.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
It's going to be like that.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Jeff.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, Willie touched on it. A story in ESPN detailing the trials and tribulations of transfer portal quarterbacks. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.